your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 PFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Good afternoon, David.
Hi, Johnny.
How are you?
Not too bad. And Big Hungry there, I presume?
I'm there. I'm out here in the cosmos with the rest of you guys.
Good. Not a different universe, then.
Nah, well, you know, from time to time, I drift. I'm a celestial being. What's going on?
Well, I thought I'd start off with a story from last time. That was the SpaceX Crew Dragon mission where they sent a craft up to the space station with a crash test dummy basically on board. As sort of got to that stage last time, or was just about at that stage last time we talked. So since then, the mission was completed completely successfully. The craft was attached to the space station for about 5 days. The crew on board went through and checked inside the cabin, retrieved some cargo and so on, and put some stuff back in. And then on the Friday, it was detached, deorbited, and it splashed down perfectly off the coast of Florida.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, the very, very successful test flight. So they'll be aiming to have people on board next time to go up, which looks like it's going to be in July, probably.
Okay.
Before then, as mentioned last time, Boeing, they'll be sending their test capsule up, similar sort of idea, and if that's successful, Boeing will be sending astronauts up a few months after the SpaceX, so it'll be two private companies able to take astronauts up to the space station.
Just on the splashdown side of things, that's obviously what you're meaning when they sort of parachute the thing back down to Earth. They obviously have a pretty rough idea where they're going to aim when they do that stuff, but I was wondering if there's ever been any trouble with like people landing in the wrong waters, or you know, that kind of thing. They can't get the ship back, or you know, that kind of crud. Does that ever kick off, or are we pretty?
No, that's one of the remarkable things.
Everybody respects it, I guess. Respects the space.
Well, no, if you saw the movie, what was that about figures? About the African American woman in the Apollo era who did the calculations for them.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, I've heard it's recent, this movie, isn't it?
Yeah. What they figured out was a way of figuring out where, not just where a spacecraft would land, but what you do have to do in orbit to get it to land at that point.
Right.
Now, since then, obviously, computers and simulations and so on have gone out of sight. So, no, they're pretty accurate these days. I mean, the worst thing that would happen would be something untoward happening to the capsule once it's in the water.
Yes.
There was one craft where that did happen, and they got the astronauts off just before the capsule sunk.
Far out. Oh, I guess they'd kind of meet them out there, wouldn't they?
They do, and what SpaceX had was actually these motorboats. They're very fast.
Rad.
Motorboats. But, I mean, if it's really rough seas and so on, that can be a problem, so they have to try and time it with the weather as well as best they can. If there was a problem up in orbit, they might not have that sort of flexibility, I guess.
Okay.
But that hasn't caused a disaster so far.
Nice.
Frankenstein, what does that mean?
Now
Frankenstein. Yeah, well, remember Ultima Thule, the object that the New Horizons spacecraft passed by a couple of months ago. They've now, well, they're still downloading data. They've got something like a bit over 1%, believe it or not, of all the data that the craft obtained in the few hours during flyby. Just, it's going to take until sort of September next year to get all the data back. But they've sort of been sending down the high quality, the high importance data first. And what they've found is the two lobes that make up this thing that looks a bit like a snowman themselves are made up of individual pieces. So given the way it's attached, they're pretty sure each object formed from other pieces that coalesced, and then the two main objects sort of did a bit of a dance around each other and sort of aligned up gravitationally, and the collision would have been a bit the same as walking into a wall. It would have been about 3 kilometers a second. Because there's no sort of damage at the connection point. So it's telling, plus the fact there's very little in the way of sharp craters and small craters on the surface, that it was a pretty sort of mild environment, really, as far as collisions and so on goes. And that actually works in with another study that they've been going back over the Pluto imagery, which goes back in 2014 when New Horizons went past Pluto. And what these people do is they sit on and they count every crater they can see, and they characterize each crater. So they did that with what they had on Pluto. They did that with this main moon called Charon. And what they found, that there's not many small craters. If you look at the moon, it's got large craters, medium-sized craters, small craters, micro craters.
Is that to do with atmosphere?
No. What they think, because this is the same on Ultima Thule, the same on the moon of Pluto, as well as Pluto itself.
Right.
I mean, there's lots of craters, but there's this gap in the sort of one, it's about 13-kilometer-sized craters. And because they can figure out the size of the object that would cause craters on each object, they reckon there's a lack of objects out in that area of space that are about 1 to 2 kilometers in size. So basically, there's a lack of small objects out there. So you're not going to find, as in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, there's a whole range of sizes of asteroids, especially small ones, but out where Pluto is and beyond, it seems that that is not the case. It is quite different to the asteroid belt.
Is it possible that some of them are getting sucked up by any one of these 83 primordial supermassive black holes that have been discovered?
You've been reading my list. No, I'm afraid not. No, what it's really saying is that way out there, little has changed since the beginning of the solar system. It's primordial. There's not been a lot happening for billions of years out there. And so it's telling scientists something about the conditions back at the time of when the solar system began, that
right.
It was more gentle. Closer to the sun, where we are, objects, I mean, obviously millions of kilometers apart, but there's still a lot more of us there. Plus, we've got Jupiter that really stirs things up with its large amount of gravity. Anyone want a job, just go out and count craters. No, those supermassive black holes, I'm afraid they are way back at the beginning of the universe, when the universe was 10% of its present age.
Oh, the little bloody bugger.
So these are way, way back, over 13 billion light years away.
Back when the universe just had its little gumboots on, it was jumping in puddles and that. Cute little universe.
Well, it's back at a time when the universe was basically just hydrogen.
Right.
And so what happened was you had this hydrogen atoms formed, but then it went through a period where they all split up into the protons and electrons. It's called ionization.
Is that like the universe teens, the sort of awkward teens who's trying to figure itself out?
Possibly, but you need something to cause it to happen.
Right.
And so what they thought, these supermassive black holes are very, very bright because they have a lot of gravity, so they attract a lot of material.
What?
They accelerate their material a great deal.
So they're bright
and
holes.
They glow very bright. They're called quasars.
Okay.
Okay, quasi-stellar object. So they look like a star, but they're actually hugely massive. They're the brightest thing in the universe.
Wow.
They just keep on going, you know, aside from a supernova explosion. They're just absolutely mind-bogglingly bright, but also mind-boggling far away. So they found 83 of them in this survey, but it's not enough if you extrapolate that to the whole sky sort of thing, to cause this ionization back at the beginning of the universe. They were looking to see whether these quasars, these massive black holes, might have caused that to happen, but it seems that there aren't enough of them. So they're still stuck with trying to explain this ionization period at the beginning of the universe.
Hmm. Hey, now, David, we often think of Venus as our closest neighbour in the solar system.
Well, John, you'll be surprised.
But has science found that somehow Mercury is closer? How does that work?
Okay, this is just, you know, sort of.
Sort of?
So if you normally think of, like, Venus gets closer to us than any other planet, so it gets closer to us when we are close than Mars. Mars comes, we get close to Mars, but Venus gets closer to us than we do to Mars. But if you're talking about, that's just an, when you're talking about that in general terms, you're talking about subtract our distance from the Sun from Venus's distance from the Sun versus Mars' distance from the Sun or Mercury's. But a lot of the time, Venus is on the other side of the Sun from us.
Classic Venus.
Okay, and Mars is even further away on the other side of the Sun from us most of the time. And so what these guys did was to figure out how long each planet spent away from us, including the time that they're on the other side of the Sun. And what they found is that Mercury actually is closer to us more than Venus is.
Okay.
Over the long period. Okay. And in fact, it's not just Earth. Mercury is actually, on average, the closest planet to all the other planets.
Ah.
So it's even closer to Neptune than Uranus would be, on average.
Whoa.
Because Neptune spends a lot of its time on the other side of the Sun, and at that time, of course, Mercury is a lot closer.
I'm actually really, really stoked about the way you say Uranus, because I've been obviously growing up as a young school child. You have your fun with words, don't you? And I was calling it a whole other thing. Now I feel way safer saying it that way.
Yeah. Always call it Uranus. Yes, I mean, Venus is our closest neighbor when it's close, but it's not our closest neighbor on average or over a long period of time.
The elliptical spins, isn't it? So, hey, listen, the last chance for Mars and Matariki after sunset, is it? Is that the buzz?
Yeah, they're getting very low in the west after sunset. The sun is moving, well, Earth's moving around, which means that Matariki is going to be intercepted by the sun, so we're not going to see it from a few weeks until the beginning of June. Mars is making its way around the sun, so the two of them are quite close, but they're low down, so we've got another 2 weeks or so. To see them, you need to be up high or out west. The atmosphere and the Waitakere Ranges might get in the way just looking from normal places in Auckland.
Right on. Now, as expected, a synthesized universe featuring Anthony Tonin is sold out.
It is. The first two shows were last night. They were sold out. Tomorrow night,
I think John.
Two shows are sold out.
I think John reserved two tickets for us, so we should be good. Hey, John, you did that, eh?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It might be worth ringing close to the time and seeing if there's any cancellations. Perhaps, I don't know.
John, you listening?
But at the moment, I'm told that everything is sold out.
Right on.
Tonight, though, there is still the, if you're into rock music and so on, we've got the Rock of the Dome show on tonight and next Tuesday. So this is a laser show and a light show with Pink Floyd. So
which record?
Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here.
Okay. Let me know when you're doing Dark Side of the Moon. That's my buzz.
That's next month in April.
Right on. Thank you very much.
Yep.
What's this Autumn Stories in the Sky?
Autumn Stories in the Sky is a show about constellations. It's narrated by Lucy Lawless and John Rhys-Davies. So we've had the three other seasons. This is the final one in the series. It's two more weekends to see that. Where are we? Saturdays and Sundays at 6 p.m. Okay, so two more weekends to see that in the weekend. $12 for an adult, $10 for children.
All right. And yeah. Everyone can just head along to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium, www.stardome.org.nz.
That's run.org.nz.
Thank you very much, David. It's always a pleasure, mate.
Look forward to seeing you next time.
Right on.
Bye.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.